At this time, I'd like to invite Alex's daughter, Alexa, to the front of the sanctuary at this time to deliver the eulogy, after which we'll follow a song and then open testimonials. Please feel free to approach the microphone, and at the conclusion of the music, please share your name and your relationship with the family. Alexa.
Hi. My father, Alex Fraser, did many interesting things in his life. The prior speakers, the Washington Post, they've all done a good job of describing many of those accomplishments and fun moments. There's a link to the Washington Post piece in the order of service in case you haven't seen it. What I wanted to tell you about today, however, are a few things that didn't make it into those stories. Things that no one else can tell you about. My dad was, by his report, a scrawny sort of a kid. Maybe a kinder word would be lanky, but his youthful pictures show him to be all leg. When he was young, his dad had one seasonal business in Indiana and another in Texas. And the result was that he got the pleasure of being the new kid in school twice a year. Also, by Dad's report, his mother felt that the family had a status to uphold. And during the Depression, at a time when most of the kids in either school had no shoes, his mother required him to wear ballet slippers and velvet knickers. Yes, he was a scrawny kid, and I'm pretty sure he outran those who wanted to take him down a peg much more often than he won any fist fights with them. I don't know if that is how he started to run and gained his passion for physical fitness, or if he was just a natural athlete. In high school, he was one of the fastest cross-country runners and hurdlers in Indiana. He took this passion for running and swimming with him throughout his adult life. Indeed, in the area behind me, there's a certificate from the YMCA. This was a standard certificate that they offered all their swimmers. They had a club for swimmers. And there was a blank line on the certificate where they were supposed to write in the distance that you'd swum. I'm pretty sure that they didn't fill in 1,000 miles very often, but I know that they did it twice because they did it twice for him. My dad had a passion for theater. I recall going to London with him one year for spring break and his wanting to see two plays a day, each day that we were there. I recall begging him, could we please go to a museum just once? Dad expressed his passion personally, as he did most things, in his own way. He was active in Hexagon. Hexagon was and is a local theater company that creates and stages an original political satirical musical comedy review each year, and then they give the proceeds to charity. Dad loved it. He wrote for them regularly and then started to write for other productions. His plays are generally one acts, often very brief, with a satirical twist, and they were often ribald. One memorable one act had all of the characters wearing a small nose mask. As the dialogue unfolded, you came to realize that the sexiest, the oh-so-tantalizing body part for both men and women in the culture being depicted was the nose. People covered their noses for modesty. They might show a little nose to tantalize. And, of course, somebody might be caught out patting their nose. Of course, in the end, the nose masks came off, revealing the actors in their full natural glory. In 2002, Dad was invited to perform six of his plays off-Broadway. He called them Six About Sex, and with titles like Why Marriages Fail and ISO, as in Search Of, he, Ken, and I had a grand weekend in New York with his troupe. Later, when Dad was running a sideline business putting on plays in local embassies, he wrote a small play about a penguin in a zoo struggling to survive in Kiev after the fall of the Soviet Union. The play was based on Death and the Penguin by one of Ukraine's most famous authors. Our son Nathan, his grandson, acted as the penguin and made his out-of-school theatrical debut in his grandfather's play at the Embassy of Ukraine. In addition to writing plays, Dad loved to direct or produce them. Behind me, you will see some of the appreciations from the cast and actors with whom he worked. One play he directed went on the road to Croatia. I know he often said that there weren't that many good actors out there, and his job as a director or producer was to find them and point them in the right direction. He honored their craft, and for those of you who are here, I'd like to thank you for all the joy you brought him. Dad wrote two novels. One is Lost. It was set in the era when abortion was not legal in this country. The premise was that a very conservative Southern senator, male, of course, needed some minor abdominal surgery. The doctors who were going to operate on him were incensed about the senator's recent vote against legalizing abortion. Of course, the doctors inserted a fetus into his abdomen, gave him hormones to keep it viable. The challenge was on. When it was his body, would the senator abort? The other novel was a thriller about a conspiracy to abduct Elvis Presley's body from Graceland. All of Dad's plays and the one novel that survive are available at the link shown in the order of service if anyone wants some truly light reading. In 1962, my parents separated and then got divorced. I don't think my mother really wanted to be an active mother. But of course, all of our societal norms at the time would have had her become the custodial parent. Dad bucked those norms and became my one and only true parent. Dad worked hard at being an exceptional dad. He kept me in an excellent school where my dyslexia was recognized and treated. And he kept me safe for my mother. He was always my protector, always in his own way. As already mentioned, we moved to Australia and to avoid the Cuban Missile Crisis. That was an odd and a different action, but as we now know, it wasn't a bad idea. Dad raised me to always feel loved. He never, and I mean never, introduced me to anyone without saying, "This is my darling daughter, Alexa." What an honor for a self-conscious little girl. No matter how we were getting along, I knew that I was always his darling daughter. Into his 90s, he still introduced me that way. Dad raised me to always feel respected. When I was 13 or so and we discussed who I would live with if he died, he changed his plans for who would be my guardian when I told him what I wanted. And believe me, we had good times. I recall the beautiful spring day when I was about 9 and Dad picked me up from an overnight at a friend's on a rented motorcycle. We spent the day tooling around Rock Creek Park and the mall, experiencing the wonderful freedom of motorcycle and nothing else but a sailboat can bring you. And we also sailed together. I remember one year renting a sailboat in the Caribbean when I was 11, and the wind was so strong we hiked over. So far, I thought that the boom might touch the water. I was thrilled. I was safe with my father. It was as fast as I'd ever gone, How could I be anything but safe with my father? Only years later did my dad tell me that he worried we'd never get back to shore. But I trusted him fully, and I had no idea that we were in danger that day. Until recently, Dad was our family's trusted fourth member. He was one of Nathan and Ken's best friends and our go-to guy in making the logistics of our lives work. I'd literally send him an email 6 months before an important meeting at work, asking him to save the date in case Nathan was sick on that day. He always stepped in to help. And now we get to Dad's death. Dad was always a Hemlock Society sort of a guy. I'd like to share a bit of a letter from Dad to our housekeeper when I was a child. Elizabeth had written him that she had cancer and wanted to know if there was a way to die less painfully than she anticipated. He responded, "Dear Elizabeth, there is a right to death with dignity, which every person should have, and which no government should have, and which no government or organization can take away. Hard as it is to discuss, I think you are wise to bring the matter up now so that you can consider it fully. My understanding is that at this time, there is no official way that anything can be done. It is possible, of course, to sound out one's doctor on this matter. If he is as wise as you are, he will assure you that he will not let the pain get too great. If he is not so intelligent, he might not. It is important to ask him now." He wrote that in 1974. I found it in a package of love letters and personal correspondence, and it stood out. It was the only thing that was typed in the package, and he'd saved the carbon copy to attach. So I think I would see those words. We all knew Dad's belief with regard to dying as he wished and when he wished. Dad decided to act on June 7th, so Dad got the when he wished part, but not the as he wished. With all my heart, I wish that the end had been easier for him. My dad died as he lived on his own terms, and I am so proud of him. I thank you all very much for being here. I particularly want to thank all of you in this congregation who have stood by us and have offered so much loving support through my father's final days and after his death. Thank you.